With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to episode 9 of the Red Sox On Deck Prospect Podcast, part of the Over the Monster Podcast Network. I'm your host, Bob Osgood, and we have a special episode for you tonight. First, introducing my co-host as always, Shelley Verstraete. Shelley, how are you handling your idol Jacob deGrom's loss from Wednesday night?
As a Jacob deGrom fan, I kind of expected, you know, the Mets to do Mets-like things and not score any runs. But then I'm like, oh, they're going against, you know, the Red Sox and Nick Pivetta. So it's no issue. It was a really, really good game. And Nick Pivetta was okay. And the offense was okay as well. So very interesting outing this week.
For sure. I think it was the perfect outcome. I agree, as someone who always roots for DeGrom, I didn't want to see him get lit up, but it was a great series, crisp games, had Eckersley and Remy in the booth, so it was hard to beat that. We also have a guest joining us today that we're very excited about. He writes for Fantrax HQ, appears weekly on the Five Tool podcast at Fantrax, and also the Toolshed Prospect podcast at Fantrax. Prospect extraordinaire and fellow New Englander, Eric Cross. Eric, thanks so much for joining us this week. How's everything going with you?
Going pretty good. Thanks for having me. And it's funny you brought up the Grom game yesterday, because it kind of reminded me of a game I went to about 7, 8, 9 years ago now, where it was CC Sabathia going for the Yankees when he was like peak Sabathia. And we had John Lackey during that year. He had like a 6-something ERA going. So I was like, going to the game, I was like, oh, we are going to get absolutely rocked and get dominated. But then we ended up winning like 10-4 or something like that. We got Sabathia for like 6 runs in the first 3 innings. But I'm sure, Shelley, you're okay losing, DeGrom losing to the Red Sox. So that's kind of like a silver lining. Favorite team, you know, beating out DeGrom. I think you're okay with that, right?
I totally feel the same way. When I was watching it, I'm like, okay, yeah, everything's going okay. DeGrom's not getting lit up. The Red Sox are keeping it close. And totally agree.
Eric, anything I missed in that intro, or feel free to promote the work that you're doing or any big pieces that you have coming out soon?
No, yeah, you pretty much hit it right on the head, you know, where I write for my 2 podcasts. And I got a lot of work coming out soon, probably most notable for all of you that play fantasy baseball, I got my Dynasty rankings updated coming out on Monday. Obviously a lot of the fantasy and prospect work over there at Fantrax HQ. And got to give my big shout out here to my co-host on the Fantrax Toolshed, Chris Clegg. He and his wife just welcomed in their baby boy to the world earlier today. So just got to give a big shout out to him.
Absolutely. Chris is a great guy. It's great to see. All right, thanks. So first, just some maintenance and reminders. If you enjoy what we do here, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on whichever platform that you use to listen to the Over the Monster podcast, whether that is the On Deck podcast or the Over the Monster podcast with Matt Collins and Brian Joyner, the Red Seat with Jake Devereaux and Keaton DeRocher, or the Precap pod with Shelley and Keaton. So kind of start with some news and notes. The first one is we have minor league games next week for the first time in, about 20 months. And with the way that the timelines have been adjusted over the last year or so, I was hopeful but not convinced that May 6th would be the date. So we started to see some assignments rolling out today. We haven't seen the Red Sox come in just yet, so that's certainly something we'll be reviewing next week. But hope you guys are ready to watch some actual competitive minor league action.
I definitely am. It's been too damn long. You mentioned 20 months. I think my last game was right around, you know, the last week of the regular season for minor league ball, which is always right around Labor Day weekend. So it's been too damn long. So I am extremely excited. I'm going to be in the ballpark, probably with my two kids in tow, or at least one of the two. Yeah, very, very excited to get back to into the ballpark.
Yeah, I totally agree with Eric. I've been waiting for, the Giants, which is the Double-A team that's closest to me near Richmond, Virginia, to announce their roster, because the Giants has a really interesting team. But I'm just ready to really get back to the ballpark. I got that email from MILB, last week or something, your MILB TV subscription has been renewed, and I'm just like, oh my goodness, it's actually happening. It's actually happening, and I'm so excited. It's been way too long.
I'm with you. I will be signing up for that in the next week and ready to go as well. So in terms of actual news and notes, Jaron Duran has been playing some left field at the alternate site, and according to Alex Cora, he's going to be mostly playing center field but mixing in a little bit of left field and right field, as he said, to keep getting better and keep the options open. Since the start of 2019, he's only played center field, outside of a few games at the Arizona Fall League, so between Double-A and the alt site and in Puerto Rico spring training. So it sounds like he's going to be mixing that up. Shelley, do you make anything of that, or do you think it's just what Cora says to keep the options open?
I think at the beginning of the minor league season, I think it's basically just to keep the options open. But knowing that he is already playing left field, even though he had been playing center field before, and just knowing how Franchi Cordero has really, really struggled, it really makes me very excited and happy to see that he's playing a corner. So maybe we'll see Duran, faster in Boston than I was expecting. Because I was expecting him maybe June, early July, something like that. But knowing that he's already kind of sort of shifted over to the corner, that makes me really excited, because I cannot wait to see Jaron Duran in Boston.
Yeah, and it sounds like, there'll be a couple of options in between, and that kind of leads into the next piece of news, which is Danny Santana, who's actually going to be starting his rehab assignment. We haven't talked about him in a while, out at Greenville High A, and he was dealing with some health issues during spring training. His initial opt-out was April 30th. It sounds like that's going to be extended well into May due to the delayed start. Do you foresee maybe they start with Santana, possibly flip with Cordero, and kind of see how that works first? Or do you think that these might just kind of happen concurrently and we might see both of them?
Yeah, I... I do think that they'll give probably Santana a shot because Cordero has just looked like so lost over there at left field, especially at the plate. Like, he just is unbelievably lost right now. So I do think that if Santana looks okay during, like, minor league games and at the alt site, they'll give him a chance. But even if he doesn't look okay, then I think Duran will be, you know, will follow quickly behind him.
Yeah, and Eric, I know you were going to talk about Duran a little bit later, but any thoughts on this, on Santana or the news of Duran playing the corner in the outfield?
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me that they've been moving Duran around. I think they want to get him up fairly quickly. You know, he made it up to, you know, my neck of the woods, Double A in 2019, fairly early. I think he got called up here in, I think it was like mid to late May after he just tore up High A. And he didn't look good. Like, honestly, he looked overmatched, and he was still showing off the good speed, but the contact skill was kind of eroded, and the power wasn't there. But, you know, making all those gains that he made at the alt site, especially with the power game, with the slightly revamped swing, you know, I'm very excited to see Duran come up, and I do think he's up pretty soon. I say if he's not up by the All-Star break, I would be shocked, and I say Santana will probably get a call up. I can totally see that. He can play multiple positions, you know, a little bit of infield, a little bit of outfield. I don't see that really, you know, him doing much though, because he's just not good. Like, I think he's what he is. He's an org depth guy at this point. It's a guy you have just in case you get some injuries. He can fill in for a little bit, or, you know, maybe, you know, be a backup at a couple of different spots. But it's weird. Like, he has one of the weirder careers. You know, you'll see, if you look, like, go to his baseball reference page, and he had a pretty solid rookie year with Minnesota way back when, and then he was absolutely terrible for the next 6-7 years, and then had that 2020 year, came out of nowhere in Texas, and then back down to mediocrity last year. So, yeah, I don't see him doing much, just kind of holding the seat down if they don't think Duran's quite ready yet. But, yeah, getting Duran those two, you know, some looks in the corners is great, because we, you know, really the only one outfielder that's locked in to this lineup right now is Alex Verdugo. You know, Renfro's not doing well, Franchi's not doing well, so it kind of keeps the options open to get Duran up sooner rather than later, and I'm very excited. Yeah. He's, you know, one of the top prospects in the system, so with that type of game-changing speed that in top of the order upside down the road, so very excited for Duran.
Yeah, and you mentioned it. 2020 had 28 home runs and 21 steals with a .283 average just 2 years ago for Santana. So something is there, right?
Yeah, and hopefully nowhere, too.
There isn't a whole lot of speed on this team. So if he can bring a stolen base threat as a bench bat, I could see Santana sticking around just like Marwin Gonzalez has it at all different positions. So, and as you mentioned with Cordero, my goodness, 49% strikeout rate. I mean, yeah, that just jumps off of the page when you see that.
Yeah, like Shelly said, he just looks lost everywhere. Yeah. Like, in the field, at the plate, he cannot hit anything. He couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat, that old saying. It's like, and I was excited for Franchi, too, you know, coming over via trade in the Benintendi deal. I was kind of excited. I'm like, all right, he's got some upside. He's shown glimpses. He just could be something. But, yeah, this has not worked out so far.
Yeah. Moving along to Mike Schwarren. He was released and signed by the Royals. Interesting name from years prior. He was a fifth-round pick in 2016. And he threw 20 and a third innings with the big league club in 2019, gave up 22 runs, ERA over 9, whip up near 2. So, you know, I doubt there are many hot takes on Mike Schwarren, but he's going to jump on with the Royals, and we'll see what happens there if he can get a new start to his career. And then the last item that I have, it's a obligatory weekly Garrett Whitlock update, and he now has 13 and a third shutout innings with 6 hits, 2 walks, and 18 strikeouts. Wednesday night was brought in after throwing over the weekend against Seattle. Came in against the Mets, 1-0 game, really to face the heart of the Mets lineup in the 6th inning and stayed on for the 7th. You know, allowed a couple of base runners, but same old with him. 96, 82 mile per hour changeup. And I don't know, Shelly, anything to add that we haven't already said on Whitlock?
Not really. This Whitlock just totally, I am just in love with his story, just everything about him. You know, like, he was a Rule 5 pick. We got him from the Yankees, and he is just absolutely killing it right now. My good friend Mikey Ahedo over at Pitcher List wrote him up. Like, he did, like, a going deep piece. And now Mikey is just like, yeah, this guy is legit. Just, he did a, just with his spin rates and his mirroring with his pitches and just everything that's going on there. Yeah, like, he's really catching on, even outside of just Red Sox fans. So, yeah, I am all here for the Garrett Whitlock experience.
Yeah, anything to add, Eric? You think he's the best pitcher since Pedro, or what do you think?
That's obviously a little bit of a stretch. But, yeah, no, Garrett Whitlock has been a very pleasant surprise this year. You know, liked him a bit coming into the season, thought he was a good get in that Rule 5 draft. And like Shelly mentioned, from the Yankees makes it that much sweeter. And he kind of stepped into an ideal situation, I think, because, you know, obviously the Red Sox bullpen isn't just filled with all these all-star relievers, right? And last year was a very subpar bullpen. I'll try to be nice about it. They were just trotting out people that not many people had ever heard of. Like that old Colin McGregor, like, who the bleep is that guy? That's basically, you know, the Red Sox bullpen in 2020. And so there wasn't really, like, a lot of guys locked in. You had a couple with, like, Ottavino and Matt Barnes, and Barnes looked absolutely phenomenal. But he really had a chance to establish himself with this type of start into being a guy that pitches in high-leverage innings. And, you know, so far, so good. You know, the sinker-changeup combo is absolutely filthy. He's missing bats. I think he's kind of locking himself into, like, that seventh-inning role, or maybe, you know, setup role, getting some holds and stuff, setting up Barnes. And I'm very impressed with Whitlock so far. A very great get for Red Sox.
Yeah, he's one-third of the way to the all-time record for most scoreless innings to start a career. 39 innings. Can anyone guess who has that record? Pitch for the Red Sox in 2016. I'll be very impressed if anyone gets this.
Oh, wait a minute. Was it that guy that had the five-inning no-hitter who I'm blanking on his name?
DeVern Hanczak?
Yeah. It wasn't him, was it?
It was not him. It was Brad Ziegler.
Ziegler?
Yeah. Wow.
I would not have gotten Ziegler. No.
I know. I was surprised myself. All right. So, moving on, we were going to talk about the MLB draft, a couple of updates. Firstly, there was a Baseball America mock. We're going to keep reeling off these mock drafts as they come out weekly. The latest one, their third one, had Leiter going first to Pittsburgh. They had Lawler going second to Texas, and Mayer going third to Detroit, and Kumar Rocker dropping down to four to Boston. So there were kind of some rumors in that article that Detroit was impressed by the Mayer workout, the prep shortstop, and also some news, as we had mentioned previously, that Rocker's velocity was down a bit. He was sitting 93-95 in his latest outing against Mississippi State. He was throwing, or he touched 98. So that kind of brief concern for a couple of starts has waned a bit here. But we're all for, I know Shelly and I are all for, seeing Rocker drop to number four. So, Eric, we wanted to kind of get your thoughts on these four candidates and what you think the best case scenario is for the Red Sox in the draft at number four.
I would be absolutely ecstatic if the Red Sox got Kumar Rocker at four. He would probably be the best pitching prospect we've had in the system since Papelbon. It's been a while since we've had a pitching prospect with that much excitement and that much talent, even more so than Jay Groom, you know, before all the injuries. So that's obviously best case scenario for me. But will both Texas and Detroit pass? You know, I can see Detroit passing. They already got a lot of good young pitching, and, you know, they could use a boost, you know, offensively. So I can see Detroit passing. But Texas, I can see them taking a guy like Rocker, assuming, you know, Leiter goes one, which I think is the case, unless something, you know, happens here next month or so, a month or two before the draft. But getting Rocker would be absolutely incredible. Red Sox need Rocker. Like, I think Shelley and I both kind of said the same thing about this. You know, going back to last year's draft, we were hoping a guy like Mick Abel would fall to the Red Sox at, what were we, 16 or 17, I forget. And obviously he didn't, win a couple picks before that to the Phillies. And then, you know, passing on, you know, the guys that went after, like the Bryce Jarvises of the world, the Nick Bitskos. I would love to get an impact arm in this system. And if Rocker falls to the four, great. If he doesn't, I don't know if the Red Sox go with an arm, because there's not really another arm that's super close to being, you know, up there. You know, so if they don't go, you know, if Rocker's, you know, gone, I assume they'd go with one of the, you know, either Mayer or Lawler, whoever falls out of the those two. If not, a couple other ways I could see them going. Maybe Henry Davis, catcher out of Louisville, is really having a great season. You know, looks like a potential all-star caliber catcher down the road. You know, maybe they go, you know, hometown, go Sal Frelick out of outfielder out of Boston College. I don't know if he goes that high, though.
He's always skyrocketed.
Yeah, he's had a great year. And, you know, props to buddy Jeff Ponce at Prospects Live. I'm still getting used to not calling him Ralph Lifshitz. he was kind of like on Frelick very early. You know, he gets to see a lot of Boston College. So he was kind of, you know, pumping up Frelick for a while now. Maybe they go, you know, it's always those years, maybe a prep arm jumps up. Maybe like Jackson Jobe out of, you know, Heritage Hall High School, a lot of H's there, in Oklahoma City. Or maybe they go, you know, Gunnar Hoglin, Ryan Cusick, a couple, you know, college arms out of Mississippi and Wake Forest, respectively. There's a couple of ways I could see them going, but I would be shocked if they didn't go with one of the three that fall out of, you know, after Leiter goes one. In having Chaim Bloom, you know, former Tampa Bay guy, maybe they go younger. I got to feel Rocker goes to Texas, so I think Lawler or Mayer is going to be the pick. And both of them could be, you know, special types of talents. They're both very advanced for prep bats, you know, great hit tools and really toolsy projectable frames. So I would be very happy with any of those three if the Red Sox get them at four.
Yeah, and I think that we have kind of echoed the same thoughts here. And, you know, even if that takes 4 or 5 years, you know, if Bogaerts is 33, 34, hopefully he's still here. Who knows about free agency, but, you know, we said just take the best player. You don't worry about position. You'll find a way to fit these guys in, especially shortstops who are prep bats and have so much development time ahead of them. So many things change. Don't worry about the position. So, Shelley, anything that you wanted to add to that?
No, not really. I mean, Eric really just knocked it out the park. Seeing, you know, Rocker just has fallen to four. So basically in like the preseason, Leiter and Rocker have kind of sort of flipped, you know. I'm totally fine with it. And even if we, even if Texas or Detroit take Rocker, I'm totally fine with Henry Davis. Like I've kind of come around to Davis and just like his hit tool and everything. And maybe he can still, you know, stick behind the plate. I'm really excited about that. But just having the fourth pick, I obviously we haven't picked this high in a very, very long time. So it's really nice to just kind of watching all of these mock drafts come out and just being kind of like in the hunt for all of these great players.
Unfortunately, I think the last time we picked in the top 10 that I can recall was when we picked seventh and took Trey Ball.
No,
did not work out well.
Oh my gosh, Trey Ball. Oh,
I saw him in Portland. It was a few years into his career. Like obviously, it took him a long time to even get up double A level.
Yeah,
and he just wasn't good. Like the velocity wasn't even there. He couldn't find the strike zone at all. So yeah, that was safe to say that was a bad pick.
That was definitely a bad pick.
So let's hope this is a redemption this year with this pick.
I hope so.
All right, so we wanted to move along to kind of ask Eric about his top prospects in the Red Sox farm system. You've heard Shelley and myself talk way too much over the last 2 months, waiting on some game action. Eric, we figured we'd start by asking you, who are your top five prospects in the Red Sox farm system in order?
Yeah, so number one, no surprise here, Tristan Casas, absolute stud. I have Jeter Downs 2, Jaron Duran 3, kind of close there. Tanner Houck is my 4, and Gilberto Jimenez is number 5. It could have gone a few different ways at 5. There's not really a clear-cut guy, but I do like the projection of Jimenez, the defense and the speed, and the hit tool is coming along well, a little bit of power there as well. So I think he might be the toolsiest player in this system, so I popped him at 5.
Yeah, and we'll kind of dive into each of these to some extent, but we figured we would give you the floor to talk about your number one prospect, Tristan Casas. What have you seen from him, floor, upside, and do you think there's a chance we see him during the 2021 season?
Yeah, I've had a lot of people ask me that if the Red Sox are in contention and Dahlbeck is still struggling, which with his plate discipline issues is a definite possibility, if they would call up Tristan Casas if he's performing well in the minors. I think that's a possibility. I wouldn't bet on it, but I don't think we can 100% rule out a Casas debut if he starts, if he hits well this season. At the earliest, I don't see them bringing him up before like August or so if it does happen. But man, I am incredibly excited about Casas. I wrote him up back in, I think it was this early December, so earlier part of the off season. He's the type of hitter, I've said it for a long time. Lefty power is tough at Fenway, right? Like, unless you're Mo Vaughn, David Ortiz, someone like that. It's obviously, right. You got Pesky's pull, and then the wall just shoots out. So I think the bullpens are, 380 or 385, something like that. So it has a way of taking power, lefty power, and knocking it down a peg. It did that with Benintendi and others throughout the years. But I think Casas is one of those types of power hitters that can, it doesn't matter. He's got the power to muscle 35 bombs a year out of Fenway. And he is more than just a power hitter, right? Like, the hit tool has come along very well. I think he's above average hit tool, probably, a 270, 280 type of hitter. Can get on base at a high clip as well. Doesn't have a lot of strikeout issues, so he's a much better pure hitter than Bobby Dahlbeck. I think their power might be comparable, but just in terms of pure hitting ability, it's Tristan Casas by an absolute mile. So that really excites me, and you probably get this. I'm assuming he's going to be at up here in Double A Portland at some point, maybe to start the season. I'm assuming so. He's going to get up to Single A 2019, so I'm assuming he starts in Double A. So I'll be seeing a lot of him starting next week, which will be very exciting. But yeah, I think he's going to be, middle of the order bats, hitting right in the middle with, Devers and Bogey and JD and Verdugo. Just adding more power to this lineup that already has a good amount of power in it. I'm all in. I haven't been this all in on the Red Sox prospect in quite some time, probably since Xander Bogaerts came up good, was that 7 years ago now? Yeah. Back in 2013, so 8 years ago. I'm just
during
all
that
in.
World Series.
Yeah, it's so exciting to get a power hitter like this. You got to plop him right in the middle of your order with the power to even flirt with 40 home runs annually. This guy's gonna be an absolute stud. You don't hear anything bad about Casas. Everything is positive that you hear coming out of alt site and wherever it may be. So yeah, definitely. Very excited about Casas.
Yeah, and you mentioned the difficulty of a left-handed hitter at Fenway, but he just seems like such a smart hitter. And, I'm sure we'll watch what it took a few years for David Ortiz to do, which is go to left field with power and use that wall to his advantage. And, for such a big guy, he has such a smooth swing and keeps it simple even when he's behind in the count, uses all field. So totally agree. I don't think that it will be much of a downside at all being a lefty at Fenway. He has that kind of power. Shelley, anything that you wanted to add here on Casas that we haven't already discussed ad nauseum?
Not really, other than I totally agree. Like, this is like one of like the better hitting prospects that we've actually had, like an all-around hitting prospect from a hitting, power, everything standpoint. You know, he's just like one of those guys that's just really going to stick with the team for a very long time. And you're just going to love to see at the plate like a Freddie Freeman, Joey Votto type of first baseman where you just set it and forget it. You're just going to enjoy this type of absolute talent. I am so excited to watch Casas this year.
Yeah, definitely. And the next one was Jarren Duran that we wanted to discuss. And I know you said that you have Jeter Downs 2, Jarren Duran 3. I was saying last week, you know, the more film that we see and the more news that we get from whether it's Puerto Rico or the alternate site, and especially excited to see kind of how things work out a week from now, I assume at AAA, that I'd be willing to put him at number 2. I might be crazy. I was looking at the Baseball America's latest rankings. He's at 97 in their top 100, and they still put a 45 grade power and a 70 grade run grade on Duran. I feel like those might meet in the middle a little bit with the power that he's starting to show. But what do you think, Eric? Do you have those two pretty close? And what have you seen from Duran, and what is kind of your expectation there?
Yeah, they're very close for me. And you know, over the last year, that gap between Downs and Duran has really, really closed. Because like you mentioned, all the positives you hear from Duran, which there have been positives coming out weekly out of Duran last year, this year, and spring looked very good. So yeah, it is very close between the two of them. I think all three, you know, including Casas, our top 100 guys overall in baseball. So, yeah, very excited. And, you know, what I saw with Duran, even though he didn't have the greatest showing, I still saw, like, you know, the tools to be a high-impact player at the major league level. You mentioned the run grade. And, yeah, right now I do think he's, you know, pushing double-plus run. And maybe, you know, he does kind of slow down a little bit. But even so, like, worst-case scenario, he's a plus runner, 25, 30 steal potential there. You know, not the greatest center fielder, but solid enough. Like, he's a decent. I wouldn't say he's going to have any gold gloves in his future, but, you know, moved very well. You know, he's a very athletic guy, obviously. You know, his reads were fine. Didn't really stand out, but didn't lack anywhere either. Doesn't have a great arm, but, you know, neither did Jacoby Ellsbury. You know, not everybody can be Jackie Bradley Jr. combining great range with a cannon for an arm. You know, I think we've kind of been spoiled with our center fielders over the last 10, 15 years for the most part. But yeah, I think he'll play a adequate center, you know, good range. That's very exciting. And if that power sticks, and it looks like all indications are that power gain is for real. You know, I kind of, you know, when he heard the reports last year out of the alt site, and, you know, we all saw the videos coming out on Twitter, YouTube, wherever it may be. I'm like, all right, that's great to hear. Love seeing it. Now let's see if it sticks in games. It did this spring, you know. And I think if that power is here to stay, and he's more of a, you know, 15, you know, teens homer, like a 15, 16, 17 homer guy, as opposed to a more of a 8 to 10, like he kind of projected to be originally, I think that could push him ahead of Downs, especially when you add in the defense and center, which is always very valuable. So yeah, for real life purposes, I think. Yeah, there's a good chance Duran could vault ahead of Downs here this season. But I'm excited for all three. I'm a big Jeter Downs guy. I think his type of profile is going to fit very well at Fenway. Yeah. I think he's going to be a guy that people love. He's going to be, you know, a little bit of hit, a little bit of power, a little bit of speed, pepper in the monster. And he's got a kind of a pull-happy way in his profile. So I think Red Sox fans are going to be very, very happy with all three of these guys within the next few years.
Yeah, and it easily could be that there's just been more news about Duran, so there's right. A little more helium behind that. You know, we'll get to see a lot more video, real games of Down soon. So I might be jumping the gun a little bit, but I'm on board fully with everything you said there. You did have Tanner Houck, and I think, you know, those three are kind of a tier, and then you had Tanner Houck in your top five. What were kind of your thoughts on his early season outings compared to the scouting reports and the book on Houck, you know, along with his late 2020 outings as well? We got a short look at him last year. You know, what have you seen this year, and kind of what roles do you anticipate that Houck might fill in the long term?
Yeah, Houck kind of has been reminded me a lot of the Hauk I saw back in 2019 in AA, where not a lot has changed. Oh, you know, there's been minor changes here and there. He's, you know, throwing the slider even more this year. And that slider is filthy. That slider was filthy back then. It's still filthy now. It's easily a plus pitch. Gets a lot of whiffs with it. 53.6% whiff rate this year. Very, very good. But, you know, I don't like pitchers that don't have, like, a viable third pitch. And, yeah, you could say, oh, he throws the four-seamer and the sinker. That's great. But I would love to see, you know, the split finger he uses. You know, I would love to see some development there, or maybe develop a changeup. You know, he's got there's a lot of good changeups on this staff, so hopefully someone can teach this guy a changeup just to give, you know, another off look to lefties too. Because he's more, you know, you only have to gear up for the two pitches. It's kind of easier to figure him out. And while those two pitches are very good, he's got the velocity averaging around 95 miles an hour. But both his fastball and the sinker have been hit pretty hard this year for the most part. 286 batting average against on the four-seamer, 500 on the sinker. Yeah, it's early, small sample size. But I'm still, like, I like what I've seen, and the talent's there. The talent is very apparent, but I think there needs to be some tinkering, right? More so with the changeup or a split change, whatever he wants to do. I love to see some development there. And overall, just his command and control in general has always been kind of fringe average at best, probably below average. You know, I haven't seen that really take any steps forward over the last few years. He always walked a lot of batters in the minor leagues, over 10%. You know, that's kind of sticking in the major leagues as well. So I do think there's a potential for a mid-rotation arm here. Best case scenario of, you know, some of these things that I mentioned, you know, improve, you know, especially the command and control. If not, you know, maybe they go the Papelbon route, move him to the bullpen. You know, that fastball slider combination could be lethal in the bullpen. And, you know, maybe he's a closer long term. I think there's definitely that possibility as well with the pitch mix that he has. So a lot of ways they could go with Tanner Houck.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how, you know, the next couple of years will be very huge for him in his development. He's got a lot of good arms around him, you know, a lot of good people in this organization to get him on the right track. So I'm pretty high on him. I think they're going to find a good role for him. What that is, I think that's still kind of up in the air right now.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that about a closer, because I could definitely see that, you know, and not in his current state, but if he can keep the command and control in check and be able to locate those two really good pitches, if he cannot end up developing a third, I could easily see that 2 or 3 years down the road. Shelly, what do you think? I feel like that might be why he is, I mean, he's clearly one of the, 13, 14 best pitchers. He's been sent down at this point, probably working on a third pitch. Do you think that's what they're trying to accomplish right now?
Yeah, and I mean, it's like Eric said, like, there were so many different avenues to where his major league career could go, because I do think that he's a major leaguer, whether it's, you know, a back-end starter, end of the game reliever. Just there's so many different ways, because there were so many different ways where his, like, pitch mix can go. Can he add that third pitch? Is he just gonna just really rely on that, you know, that slider in the back of the bullpen? There's so many different avenues to where it can go. I still kind of believe that he's just going to be a lights out reliever in the end, just because of what I've seen in the minor leagues and what I've seen so far. Because I mean, I don't think that we've seen him, like, face a team, you know, twice, you know, in the same season. So, you know, it's just kind
of
like
to see him throw in Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just like, yeah, I don't know. But I do know that he is a major leaguer. I just don't know which type of role. So I definitely agree with Eric. Yeah. There's a lot of different avenues for him to go.
All right, perfect. I did want to talk about A couple other names, Eric, we wanted to get your opinion on. One of them is Brainerd Bonacci, who we've talked about in a couple different episodes here. And I remember reading, kind of seeing you the highest. You had him up near your top 10 a year ago when you did your rankings, which, you know, you were kind of the first that I saw having him that high. And he's really shot up a lot of boards into the top 20, top 15 this year. What do you see with Bonacci and kind of, you know, long-term ceiling? I know that there's a lot of development, still a young kid, but kind of why do you have him that high and even did last year?
Well, first off, it helps that the Red Sox system isn't great. Like, I don't think he would have been super high. Like, you plop him in Tampa Bay, I don't think he's even would be in my top 25 or 30 for the most part. But, you know, with that being said, this is a lot to like about Bonacci, a lot of projection. And first off, the name Brainerd Bonacci is just an 80-grade name. Like,
oh, yeah.
It sounds, like, cool. It sounds fancy. It's just a great name, Brainerd Bonacci. So I want to see him succeed just so I can hear that name, you know, said as much as possible down the road.
Yeah. Hopefully he and Thaddeus Ward are up together.
I know, right? There's a lot of good names in this system. Jason Rosario and Connor Siebold. There's a lot of good names in this system. But, yeah, Bonacci... There's not really anything that sticks out about him. Like, there's not like that standout tool. He has a great arm. That's probably his best tool, at least a plus arm. But he just does a little bit of everything well. You know, he's a smaller guy. He's listed at 5'10", 140. Looks like he has added some little bit of weight from what I've seen in some videos. But that's still kind of remains to be seen where he kind of checks in at this year. But there's some growing power here and plenty of projection on that frame. Yeah, so he's 5'10", so he's still got some projection left there. I think he could get maybe up to fringe average power, at least be like a double-digit homer guy. Hit tool is probably his best offensive tool. Grades it above average. He's a switch hitter. A lot of good bat speed, smooth swings. Contact skills are very good. Can use the entire field. Really good barrel control there. But, you know, it still kind of remains to be seen. We haven't really seen him a lot in game action yet because, you know, obviously he was a 2018 international free agent and only really had 2019 to get any work in before getting shut down in 2020, unfortunately. So I think he could be one where, you know, if he starts off hot this year and continues kind of showing the tools that, you know, have kind of already gotten him rising up a lot of rankings, I think he could really, really shoot up into a lot of top 10s this year, you know, and who knows where he ends up long term. Obviously, he's so far away, you don't really worry about that now. You know, shortstop, second base, maybe move him in the outfield, we'll see. But, you know, he's a good athlete. You know, he doesn't have a great run tool, and he's probably around an average runner, maybe slightly above average. But he's a good athlete, moves well, so I think he could make that transition to the outfield if that's the way they want to go with him. But, you know, just a lot of projection here. One of the more projectable guys in this system. So it's easy to get excited about a guy like Bonacci in the system that doesn't really have a lot of these projectable guys. So he's one that I'm really intrigued to see this year in game action.
Yep, absolutely. 18 years old, and this will be kind of our first good look at him. So, yeah, I'm hoping that he weighs more than 140 at this point, which is the last number that we had on that. But, you know, you basically got a high school-age kid, so... That's to be expected. And then kind of the next one that we want to talk about was Noah Song. And a couple of weeks back, we talked about Song. We told the backstory there that he is with the Navy right now, fulfilling a commitment to the country. But we also mentioned that he throws 99 miles an hour and with a good slider and changeup and had pitched for Team USA in 2019 as well. So anything, you know, what have you seen with Song, you know, on the field to get some excitement? And do you have any expectations of him? We've kind of talked about him as the widest range outcome of anybody in the system.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think, you know, I've said this more than one time, he could be the best pitching prospect to come out of this current Red Sox system. You know, that's not really too much of a stretch because there's not really any, you know, locked in guys that you're like, oh, that guy's going to be great in terms of pitching prospects at least. But yeah, really, really impressed. You know, I was hoping to get down to see him in 2019 and almost did in one of his starts for Lowell, but couldn't make it work. I was heading up to Manchester, New Hampshire for a game later that night, and the timing just didn't work out great. But from what I've seen in videos and watching some minor league games, he is, like you mentioned, he's got the three above average to plus pitches. Pretty solid command and control, you know, pounds the strike zone. Doesn't really get beat by, you know, allowing a lot of free passes. Doesn't get himself behind in too many counts. Really attacks the zone. And I love guys that just attack. Those are the guys I really like to see and love watching those types of guys pitch. And he showed all that in 2019, you know, after the draft. And he was a great, you know, 24th round pick. I think he was an absolute steal in the fourth round. So I think he has, you know, obviously it's hard to say right now, obviously, because he's got the, you know, commitment to the Navy, like you mentioned. Won't even be back until, I think, next year. I think he's eligible to come back. So at that point, I think he'll be 25. So a little bit of an older prospect, but definitely one that could, I think, make the transition back and kind of get to the major leagues pretty quickly. He was a very advanced arm, you know, prior to going back to the Navy. So I don't think it'll take a long time to kind of get back in the swing of things and probably start him out in like double A or something like that. But yeah, very, very exciting overall profile. I think he maybe has the best all-around arsenal in this entire org. Better than Grooms, better than Houck's, better than Thad Ward's, you know, Brian Mata. I think, like I said, I think there's a chance Song does end up as the best pitching prospect come out of the system. Whether that's more like a number four or number three guy at best, I don't think he's got like frontline potential, but definitely a lot of things to like with Noah Song. So I'm intrigued to see him back in the system next year.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said there. I think that it'll be interesting to see if and when he comes back, if kind of what his stamina is, if he, how many years he might need to work that back up to be a starter, or if they just go directly to the relief route. Shelly, anything that you wanted to add about Song or Bonacci, which I know we've talked about them plenty, but any thoughts on what Eric said?
No, other than I totally agree. Bonacci was kind of like my guy for the Over the Monster Roundtable. Like, who was the guy outside of the community top 20 that should have been in the top 20? And for me, it was definitely Brandon Bernacchi. I'm very excited to see him. And kind of, you know, I looked at, you know, the Sox prospects kind of like projected like rosters. And Bernacchi is projected to be right below low A, and I do think that he's going to get promoted, so that he's going to be kind of sort of in my realm of getting to games near, you know, Salem, Virginia, so that really makes me excited. So I might be able to see this guy. And then, yeah, with Noah Song, he has all of the talent in the world. Just seeing him in college and Team USA and just everything that he did, I'm so excited. It's just like, is he pitching? When are we going to see him pitching? Like, he is definitely the absolute hardest prospect to rank, whether it's Red Sox, whether it's just any team whatsoever. He is the absolute hardest prospect to rank.
Yep, I'm with you there. And kind of the last question that we wanted to ask you, Eric, and you, Shelly, as well, you know, deep sleepers to watch, and you can name one or as many as you want to, but outside of the top 20, we haven't seen any of these players play in most of them 20 months. So who do you think might be off the radar a little bit and that you think could jump up into the top 20 next year? Starting with you, Eric.
Yeah, this was a harder one to figure out. There's a couple guys I looked at, but, you know, as we were talking about before we came on the air, this isn't a really deep system. Kind of thins out pretty quickly. But one that intrigues me that's outside of most top 20s is Nick Decker, an outfielder, second-round pick back in 2018. He was a prep bat back then. And when you're looking at these deep sleepers, you know, guys outside the top 20 like you mentioned, you really got to look at the specific tools that they have and really kind of find some guys that stand out in a couple different areas. And that's what Nick Decker does. He has a good arm, you know, close to a plus arm, and he's got plus power. He's kind of fits that corner outfielder, strong arm, power hitting mold. But, you know, unfortunately with him, and the reason why he's ranked pretty low is that the hit tool hasn't been there. He's really struggled against left-handers. He can mash. Like, when he connects the ball, like that sound is there with Nick Decker. He absolutely cranks the ball, power to all fields. You know, I think he's another guy that could hit, you know, 25, 30 home runs over a full season, but will he ever hit enough to kind of fully capitalize on that power? That remains to be seen. And so he's another one I'm going to be really, really intrigued by. See if, you know, over the last year and a half, if that hit tool, you know, if he's made any, you know, changes to the approach and chasing less and how the hit tool looks this year, especially against lefties more so. Like, righties he handles okay, not great, but lefties he's really struggled. So right now he kind of projects as a platoon, you know, outfielder, best case scenario. But I think if he fixes the hit tool and figures out lefties at least to some degree, I think maybe he turns into a kind of a low-level starting outfielder. So that's really all you can ask for from these guys that are deeper in the system. But, yeah, that power is really, really intriguing if he figures the hit too well.
I like it. Shelley, what do you think? Anyone lower in the system that you'd want to talk about outside the top 20?
I love how Eric went to Nick Decker. I've been a Nick Decker fan for a while, and I know I know that he has trouble with lefties, but man, I absolutely love Nick Decker. So, yeah, you kind of took my pick. But I don't know. I also like Chris Murphy and Ryan Zephyrjohn. I don't really know who to rank higher between the two, and I think I need to see like one more season from both of them. Murphy's the left-hander, Zephyrjohn's the right-hander. What are we going to get there? Are we actually going to get like a starter? Are we going to get a reliever? I don't know. But this year, I'm really excited to watch Murphy and Zephyrjohn kind of go back and forth in my ranks. And hopefully they just really shoot up with both, because I love both of their arms. But I love that Nick Decker pick.
And I like Zephyrjohn too. For another great name, as I was mentioning earlier. But he's a very lively arm. So, you know, if he can kind of refine the rest of his arsenal, I think he could be, you know, maybe he's a guy that you find in like the sixth, seventh inning of a bullpen down the road. But yeah, definitely some intriguing arms there as well.
I was going to go super deep with mine. Luis Perales, 18-year-old. Talked about him during the, I think it was like the Rookie Ball Below Low A episode that we did. Came up throwing 95 with run on his fastball at age 16 the last time that we saw him. I'm sure he's a ways away. It could go any direction, but I'm just going to shoot for the moon and go super upside with a kid that was throwing that hard at that age and also had a very good curveball. So I'm hoping that he can learn a third pitch in the next 4 years and be on the edge of the top 20 a year from now. So that's going to be my pick there.
I like it.
All right. Anything else, Eric? Do you want to, you can let everyone know where they can find you, you know, on Twitter and your writing and podcast one more time before we let you go.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at EricCross04. All my written work is at FantraxHQ.com, and my two podcasts are the Five Tool Podcast with, you know, Over the Monster great Jake Devereaux and Jesse Roche, and then the Fantrax Tool Shed with Chris Clegg, like I mentioned earlier. And yeah, thanks for having me on. It was great to come on and talk about my favorite team, the Boston Red Sox, and some exciting prospects. So it was a great time talking with you both. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no, our pleasure. And it's great to get a different voice in here, and especially as really our last episode. You know, we'll have one more before there are any games, but last episode of April, and we're gearing up for the minor league season. So you were the perfect guest to have on, Eric. We appreciate it. Shelley, anything that you're working on right now? And where can we find you?
Yeah, you can find me over at the Dynasty Guru, over at, obviously, Over the Monster. And I do have something coming in the pipeline over at Pitcher List. I'm kind of doing a going deep piece on Nathan Eovaldi. So I'm hoping to get it out by the end of the week. But it might be early next week as well. But yeah, if you want to just read more about Nathan Eovaldi, I should have something over at Pitcher List coming up soon.
I'll be reading it, that's for sure. I love Eovaldi.
Yes.
Finally putting it all together.
Yes, it's so awesome. It is absolutely awesome what he's doing.
Yeah, we got two different pitchers that are trying to step up as the ace with in Chris Sale's absence. And if Sale can find his way back by July 4th and there's three of them all fighting for that role, it would be a beautiful thing. So looking forward to reading that. You can find me at BobOsgood15 on Twitter. I also write at The Dynasty Guru. And yeah, thank you both for joining us today. This was great. And we will talk to you next week.